Welcome to Ballistic Radio, the fastest growing gun talk show in the country. Join us. We're going to explore the topics of firearms, self-defense, and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough, you need dynamite to take them off. Now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info, photos, videos, and general silliness at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me, Matt the Minion. Mr. Minion, how's it going?
Pretty good.
That's good.
How are you?
I'm good. It's cold out.
Yes, it is.
It's getting colder, too, so... we've got a really cool show tonight. We're going to be joined by Todd Green from PistolTraining.com. We're going to be talking about all sorts of... Wait, I'm trying not to say the word interesting anymore, aren't I?
Yeah.
Intriguing? Wait. Fascinating.
It's better.
Entertaining.
Intriguing, yeah.
Entertaining. Entertaining. Yes. Entertaining topics.
We do like to entertain. We try to entertain.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, no comment. This segment brought to you by Colt. Colt, the legend continues. So... I'm going to try and do better than I did the last couple times Todd was on. I like to hang up on him for some reason. I'm trying to think if there's anything we need to cover before we get Todd on the show. And if there is, I can't imagine what it would be. So anyway, without further ado, joining us, Mr. Todd Green. Todd, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, John. Matt, how are you guys?
Not too bad.
Doing pretty good.
So, wow, he actually talked to you. That's amazing.
I think that's the first time that's ever happened.
Probably.
Is that against the rule?
No, it's okay. Just don't tell me how to discipline my servants and we'll be fine.
More 50 Shades of Grey stuff. I can't get away from it.
Oh, see, I make an Archer reference. Todd turns it into some weird mommy thing. I don't know. Anyway, so for those that don't know, Todd, you mind going over your background real quick and then we'll just hop in the everything?
Sure. I used to be the law enforcement operations manager at Beretta. After that, I was the federal and military operations manager at SIG Arms. Then about 8 or so years ago, I went off on my own and started doing training and consulting for private citizens, military units, law enforcement agencies, other companies within the industry. That's pretty much it.
Okay. Kind of known for your high round count pistol endurance tests as well. Just a little bit.
Back at one time, at least. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. I may have stolen an idea or two from you and sort of modified it slightly. So it seems
excellent.
Seems to have worked out okay for me. But so you've been taking it easy the last year or so. I don't know if taking it easy is the right word, but you've certainly not been in the public eye so much just because of some health issues. I don't know how much of that you want to get into on the air, so I'm not going to bring up any details unless you want to. But
I don't care at all.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, if you want to let people know, the point that I'm going to get to at some point or another is that you've had to sort of struggle with relearning how to shoot, for lack of a better term.
Yeah. Last year, I had some issues with my right arm, had to have a part of a bone replaced, and then 3 months later, that problem grew into a worse problem where I ended up having to have from about halfway down my upper arm to halfway up my forearm all replaced with a new titanium elbow joint. And so I spent about a year for those and other various reasons not able to handle a gun.
Right.
And then over the last few months I've slowly started to get back into it and dealing with, you know, not just the skill decay, but also literal physical rehabilitation stuff. And so it's been a very interesting adventure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and for those that are not aware, you're, you know, a very high-level shooter at one point. So the, I guess where I want to start, and please tell me it's none of my business at any point during this, but I mean, we kind of pre-discussed this a little bit.
Right.
But how was it psychologically going from, you know, being a very high-level competitive shooter to all of a sudden not being able to complete, like, basic level stuff the way that you used to be able to?
Well, it wasn't that bad because although I appreciate the kind words, I was never really any kind of high level competitive shooter. I used to shoot competitively and enjoyed it, and I certainly
when I said competitive, I was talking more about your personality and less about your.
Fair enough. I went from somebody who was, you know, a fairly good shooter to someone who, a great example is I had decided to start shooting SIGs again, which obviously I did for years while I worked there, and I've always been a big fan of them. And first time I went out to the range after having my elbow redone twice, discovered that I literally could not pull the trigger on a double action gun.
Right.
Might have actually been worked over by somebody, had some good, you know, smoothing of the trigger and all that kind of stuff. And still, a 9-pound trigger pull was more than I was physically capable of doing. And it came to one of the issues that I've run into and had to deal with in a way that I would have dealt with differently if it hadn't been a real physical limitation. And I had to decide, do I want to push on and try to get better at this thing that I had a limitation on, or did I want to kind of accept that I had a limitation and I could either find a gun that was easier for me to shoot or kind of walk around with a gun on my belt that I couldn't actually use if I needed to.
Yeah.
It was a really hard psychological shift to make of instead of saying, push through it, do what you have to do, practice as much as you have to practice until you can use the gear you want to use, and instead having to essentially admit that it could have been months or years before I'd be able to practice efficiently with a double action gun. And so it was much easier to just get a 1911 with a much lighter and easier to manipulate trigger and start working with that.
Right. Right. So was that something that you would get? We've got about a minute and 20 seconds left. Was that something you had given much thought to before you had to deal with your issues? I mean, I occasionally get asked about, you know, what should I do? I don't have much hand strength or whatever. And I never really given it much thought. Were you kind of the same way, or did you run into more people that had that problem before?
Oh, no. And in fact, you know, this is one of those things, like I said, that if it hadn't happened to me personally, I would have told a student, suck it up and, you know, start practicing more so that you can do it.
Right.
But mine was literally a function of my arm didn't have and probably never was going to have the normal amount of strength back to be able to do what I wanted to do.
Yeah. Yeah. We got about 45 seconds left in this segment. I guess, what do you think the hardest lesson so far has been with this in the next 20 seconds?
Without doubt, it was the willingness to kind of start over, reexamine what I've been doing, and figure out if it was not just the best for me now, but if there were maybe some assumptions I'd made previously that were incorrect and needed to be changed just across the board.
Okay. We'll talk about that a little bit more. We're talking with Todd Green right now. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firing finishes so tough you need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. So occasionally during the break, we hear a commercial that strikes us as funny, and then there is a struggle not to be laughing when we come back on the air. So, anyway, I don't want to say anything else. So, I like having a job. Anyway, joining us tonight, Todd Green from PistolTraining.com. Todd, are you still there?
I am indeed.
See, I seem to have learned how to work the phone in the intervening, like, year and a half. So,
you're growing in so many ways.
Yeah, I know, right? Hey, is that a fat joke? Wait, what?
Not at all.
Oh, it should be. Anyway, so you were saying before the break something that struck you, something that was a little bit different about your situation that you maybe would have handled when you were instructing, and a student had had it, is in the past you would have said something along the lines of, well, you know, you just need to try and work through it. Now having had it happen, you start looking for equipment changes. Do you think that that's a common thing with instructors, that they don't maybe put themselves in their student's shoes enough?
Well, I certainly wouldn't think that that was the case with at least most of the good instructors that I know. And I would like to think that if I had been faced with a student who had explained through to me that he had a real physical limitation, I've certainly had students that had, amputations and things like that. You can't tell somebody who's missing a leg that he just needs to work harder at running. Same sort of thing, but there's definitely always a benefit to having some experience that puts you closer into the shoes of some of the things that you've watched other people go through that you've never really experienced yourself until then.
Right. So I guess you've sort of started back at the beginning a little bit with all of this. What have been some of the, I guess, some more difficult transitions to make or things to relearn?
So probably the two biggest things is, because both the strength and the flexibility in my right arm, and I'm a right-handed shooter, were so limiting that the three things that immediately come to mind firsthand without a question, my ability to shoot strong hand only has just disintegrated in almost nothing. It's very hard for me to even hold a gun steady, very hard for me to get the gun to, you know, get my sights on target, and all that kind of stuff. It's easy for me, because my grip is so weak, to push the gun off target as I'm pressing the trigger, even a very light trigger. So that's been one of the things that deteriorated the most and is going to be the hardest to rebuild, because I can only put so much abuse into my right elbow before it starts to have potentially permanent issues.
Right.
The other two things, more to do with flexibility than anything else, are draws and reloads. My ability to draw the gun right now literally puts my elbow at its very limit of how much I can bend it.
Yeah.
As I'm pulling the gun out of a holster, and I've had to be pretty particular about what holsters I use, because even though I have some absolutely incredible leather holsters, the difference in how much the leather holster grips the gun versus a Kydex holster adds a huge amount of time and effort to my being able to draw the gun. And same with reloads. One of the things that happened as a result of one of my surgeries is that I essentially completely lost my right tricep. And although through physical therapy I'm starting to get it back, which they didn't think I would, so that's good news. But doing things like a reload where you have to put some forward pressure into the gun, those things are all a lot harder than they used to be.
Yeah. So I know of a couple different people that would maybe at this point suggest something along the lines of maybe trying to reteach yourself to shoot left-handed entirely. Has that been something that you've considered? Or, I mean,
at many stages, I've thought about that. First of all, when they went to do my surgery on my arm, we had to decide whether we wanted to take the risk or not, because there's about a 10% chance that I'd lose my arm completely as a result of complications from the surgery.
Yeah.
So as soon as we gave the thumbs up to do the surgery, I was immediately thinking, well, I might come out of this with only one arm left, in which case I don't have a lot of choices other than to shoot with only my left hand.
Yeah.
As far as shooting using my left hand as my strong hand, it actually there's more stress, at least if you shoot the way I do, there's more stress on your left elbow than your right elbow as a right-handed shooter, and you need a much stronger support hand grip than a shooting hand grip. And so for me to switch hands and use my left hand as my trigger finger hand and my right hand is kind of my supporting hand, I actually shoot a lot worse and it wears me out a lot faster. And I obviously have much less experience doing that. So then you're literally talking about starting from scratch. And all of that combined made it a worse choice than a better choice.
Right. Do you mind talking?
Kind of sticking.
No, it's fine. I was going to say, do you mind talking about that a little bit as far as why there's more stress on the support side elbow with at least the way that you shoot. And I shoot similar, so it might be an interesting topic for people that are maybe getting into this or recoil management in general.
Sure. Well, so one big part of it is that most people, if they shoot a kind of isosceles-type stance, grip, however you want to think about it, you tend to put your support hand arm a little bit straighter, just a little bit, but a little bit straighter. And one of the limitations I have right now is I'm never going to be able to stretch my right arm completely straight again. It's always going to have at least about a 10-degree flexion to it. So I'm never going to be able to extend completely. So that becomes an issue because now if you have to bend that a little bit, you have to bend the other one even more and stuff like that. And generally, at least from the way I've always taught it, the way you want to grip the gun is you want to grip it as hard as you can with both hands, but with the hand that's using the trigger finger, that hand can only be so tight as you can move your trigger finger independently. And so if you crush your strong hand grip, unless you've really built up a lot of independence with your trigger finger, you can really only crush it so hard. Whereas with your support hand, because all it's doing is supporting the gun, you can crush it pretty much as hard as you're physically capable of crushing your hand. So you want to have the hand that's got the most strength, but maybe the lesser dexterity is going to be your support hand. So in my case, both my dexterity and my strength are less for the time being with my right hand. You kind of have to figure out what balances out the best.
Right, right. So I guess something else, too, that I'm curious about is – so as you're going through this, your performance tracking before was kind of legendary. You kept track of a lot of different things. Have you thought about it like from a percentage wise or just in generalities as far as how much performance you were at before all this happened and how much you've built up now since you've started working on it again?
Not from a kind of really super detailed standpoint, like in terms of percentages and stuff.
Yeah.
At this point, I spent the first few months, there was so little that I could do properly to begin with in terms of having to rebuild simple things like being able to press the trigger right, being able to keep the gun still so I could keep my sights aligned properly, just being able to go through the physical process of drawing and reloading and things like that. It didn't make a whole lot of sense for me to be looking at keeping statistics on it because it wasn't so much a matter of how fast can I do it or how accurately can I do it. It was really more of a binary black and white, can I do it or can't I do it? Now as things are starting to become a little bit more easy and I can practice for a longer period of time and I can at least go through all the motions, I've certainly started to keep track of my ability on at least a few drills. But even now, for the most part, I'm not worrying so much about how fast is my draw as I am what do I need to do to make my draw proper. You know, I'm having to kind of, as I said earlier, it's not just a matter of how do I need to grip the pistol, but are there ways that I think the pistol could be gripped better, whether it's just for me or for people in general. So there's a lot more experimenting going on at this point. Some of it which, you know, may only apply to me, some which may not. I'm just not at a point where I could even, you know, sort of theorize on that. But at this point, I'm playing around with a lot of different ways to grip the pistol, a lot of different ways to, you know, what positions are my arms in, doing various things. And that's really where I'm at. So getting to a point where I can do what I need to do comfortably enough to be able to do it properly over and over again when I practice is really kind of the limit of where I'm at. So whether it's happening, you know, at, you know, 1.5 seconds or 1.75 seconds is way far for me to be taking at this point.
Okay. Do you think that that's We got about 50 seconds left before the next commercial. Is that something that more people could maybe benefit from, especially when they're getting started, is learning correct movements versus just trying immediately for speed?
Oh, I'd have to approach that from two different standpoints. First of all, I'm absolutely not a fan of the old saying that, you know, slow is smooth and smooth is fast. Mm-hmm. I think that that's a very easy trap to fall into, where you're always trying to just make things a little more perfect without pushing yourself to get faster. The flip side of that is, if you're not doing things the right way, all you're doing is practicing doing things the wrong way.
Okay.
And so,
well, let me interrupt just because that'll be a good place to pause. Hold that thought. Okay. We're talking with Todd Green. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of firearms finishes so tough you need dynamite to take them off. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms parts and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Bear, Sig Sauer, many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, are a first-time gun buyer, or a competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. So, we're joined by Todd Green of PistolTraining.com. Todd, are you still there?
I am.
Perfect. So, I like that you and I are texting during the commercial break, things that we're not allowed to actually say on air, but man, if we were. So... we were talking about something before the commercial, and then I got completely distracted by silliness and Minion. Do you want to help me out? Oh, you weren't paying attention either, were you? God, we're terrible at this. Oh, I remember. So when you were discussing your dislike for the slow is smooth and smooth is fast school of thought,
right,
which seems to be one of those cliches that is thrown around online quite a bit. Please elaborate.
Sure. So there are two different ways to look at it, and I think one of them makes perfect sense, which is if you can't do it right, you're just doing it wrong. And practicing being wrong over and over and over and over again, you might get better at doing it the wrong way, but you're still doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So to a certain point, you have to be doing it right before you should try doing it faster. But the mistake is to believe that if you keep getting smoother and smoother and smoother, speed will just happen all by itself. The only way you get fast is by trying to be fast.
Mm-hmm.
And so once you reach a point where you're doing things the right way, you have to start trying to do it faster. So to use my current situation as a great example, it's very easy for me to move my arm in a draw stroke where I go from my belt and then draw a straight line from my belt out to full extension. I can do that easily because my elbow will do that easily. But I don't like doing that kind of draw for a number of reasons that we don't have to get into. I like to bring the gun up somewhere between my sternum and my eyes and start moving out from that spot.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot harder for me to do. If I did what was easy for me right now, I could just keep practicing doing it the wrong way, but I'm never going to get better at doing it the way that I think I should be doing my draw. So I have to kind of sacrifice fast to do it smooth, so to speak.
Right.
But at a certain point, once I can do that movement properly, repeatedly, and do it properly, then I need to start trying to do it faster instead of just staying at the slow, comfortable speed.
Okay. So let me ask you this, and this is kind of a personal question for me, just because I've been making a lot of improvements with my speed that I'm able to do things at. And I'm, you know, an okay shooter some days, depending on what it is. But something I'm curious to get your take on, do you think for a shooter that is doing things mechanically correct, limitations to speed are almost psychological to a certain extent?
Sort of. And obviously, like anything, different people are going to be different. I've certainly met shooters who are outstandingly accurate and just can't get to a point where they're mentally comfortable with taking a risk at missing when they're trying to get faster.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a point that you pretty much have to break through if you ever really want to start pushing yourself in terms of speed. But, you know, there are other people who they might have a vision limitation, they might have a strength limitation. The thing that could be keeping them from getting faster might be more a matter of technique than psychology. And so you just have to, as an instructor, you have to kind of be able to diagnose, does this guy look like he's doing everything right and just holding himself back? Or does he need some things tweaked so that he can start to go faster and still get the hits that he wants?
Okay. So I guess I know what the answer is going to be. So how do we get faster then? Just go faster?
Well, so there again, this is another thing where there are plenty of different philosophies. What you basically have to do is you have to decide what your personal standard is, what your goal is. The goal of somebody shooting one sport, like, say, Bianchi Cup, is much different than somebody who's shooting Steel Challenge. The targets are tougher, and the penalties for, you know, having a miss are a lot greater because in Bianchi you don't get to do makeup runs, or, you know, they're not taking the best number of runs out of all your runs or things like that. So if your priority is to make sure that I always get my hit, then you have to push yourself to get better but still always get your hit. If your priority is I want to be as fast as I can and get 75% of my hit, then you're really in the same boat. It's just that you can probably afford to, you know, open up the floodgates a little bit wider because you can afford to miss more and still meet your goal.
Okay.
It just always falls back on to what are your goals and are you being smart about picking the right goal? Somebody who's primary goal in real life is actually self-defense, can't use the wide-open throttle playing the game techniques and training philosophy and then just expect that they're magically going to know that they have to throttle it back when their life is on the line.
So let's talk about that for a second. Is in a self-defense situation, kits become much, much more important than other gun games. I'm trying real hard not to get into the Timmy argument versus the gamer argument here, but help me out a little bit.
But I think that I really don't think that there's a way to get around that issue. There are, especially nowadays, it's kind of a pendulum. It swings back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
We reach a point where there's a whole lot of commonality between those two groups, the doing it for real group versus doing it, you know, at a play park group. And then you start to see the gap widen again because people are constantly pushing the limits of human performance in the game. And so you get somebody who starts to be able to do things that are just unbelievably fast, but they do it by giving up some things that the guys on a SWAT team just can't afford to give up.
Right.
And I think one of the best examples of that, because it comes up all the time, is the El Presidente drill, which was originally designed as a skill test, and anybody who could do it clean in under 10 seconds was considered a really very squared away shooter. Now, a whole lot more people can do it clean in under 10 seconds because techniques got developed and the bar got, you know, was constantly being raised by people who were absolutely, for their day, stellar shooters.
Yeah.
But now we're at a point where if you go and you look at people when they're playing, you know, various shooting sports, especially depending on the sport, it can be better to do that drill in 4 seconds, but drop a bunch of your shots outside of the A zone. Because the way that scoring system works, you're better off shooting mostly A's, but not 100% A's, if you can do it in 4 seconds.
Right.
Whereas back in the day, it never would have been considered acceptable to drop those points the whole idea of the drill is to shoot it clean in under 10 seconds. So, you get back to one of these things where you have to decide what is your priority. Is your priority to get 100% of your hit, or is your priority to get 75% of your hit as fast as you humanly can?
Okay.
And those things, right now, they're kind of diverging, and eventually, at some point, I think just like we did 15, 20 years ago, you're going to see those things start to converge again, because people will start to reach a point where they can do it 100% of the time, 100% of their hit, but do it in 5 seconds instead of 10.
Right. Right. One of the most impressive things I ever saw was, I think the last time I was at Bob Vogel's place shooting, he did a cold in like 4.5, which, you know, after I'd been running in like 6.5, 7 seconds, feeling good about myself, and he just not trying that hard did it. It was kind of crushing in a way. But I mean, that just goes to show that skill levels start to play a role into it. And then also too, I mean, is it an attributes thing at a certain point as well?
Well, I think that one of the best examples that comes out of what you're talking about when it comes to Robert Vogel is, if you said to Robert Vogel the best El Presidente you can shoot is 4.5 seconds, he'd roll his eyes, he'd turn around and show you that he can do it in 3 seconds.
Right.
But Robert Vogel is a smart enough guy to know that if he has to get 100% of his hit shooting cold, he knows that he has to dial it back from the fastest that he can do, and can still, he knows exactly what he can do when he's trying to be perfect.
Right.
And that kind of goes right back to that whole slow is smooth and all that other kind of stuff, is most people don't have the discipline to control themselves that precisely because they're not Robert Vogel. And they will mistakenly try to chase Robert Vogel's one-time personal record instead of realizing that Robert Vogel can do it in 4.5 seconds while yawning. And,
right.
And I'd much rather be able to do it in 4.5 seconds every time without, you know, needing to sweat to death in the process than being able to once in my life beat Robert Vogel's best ever time, which I'm never going to be able to do anyway.
Right, right. That's actually a good place to pause. Just we've got to go to break. When we get back,
sure.
We'll talk a little bit more about that. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Fire and finishes, so tough you need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by Boresight Solutions. Boresight Solutions offers high-end custom modification services for hard-use guns. See why industry, law enforcement, and military professionals have chosen to carry Boresight Solutions firearms. Pat Rogers, Craig Douglas, and Kyle Lamb, just to name a few, have entrusted Boresight Solutions with their personal carry guns. When I'm not busy torture testing project guns, I trust my life to a Boresight Solutions pistol. Quality craftsmanship, improved ergonomics, and amazing attention to detail are what you will receive with every custom Boresight Solutions gun. Boresight Solutions, tools to live by. So we're talking with Todd Green about recovering from injuries, performance, and knowing when to go slow and when to go fast. Todd, are you still there?
Absolutely.
Cool. So I guess I kind of want to go back to that just for a minute, and then I'll ask you a silly question, or at least a question that I'm sure will alight the interwebs. As far as knowing when to go slow and knowing when to go fast, I mean, is that a byproduct of being an experienced shooter? Is that something where you have to know your own personal skill level very well?
I think it comes right back to how you decide to train. People who are constantly trying to set their own personal best record every time they go out are probably going to get faster more quickly, but they're going to have a harder time consciously dialing it back. Whereas people who maybe might advance a little bit more slowly, but they make every single repetition of what they do about being right, are going to have a much easier time of doing it the right way when they don't have an opportunity to think it through first. So this is another one of those great examples between the defensive shooter guys and the competition shooter guys. competition shooter, before he starts shooting, he gets to look over the course of fire. He gets to think about what he's going to do. Where is he going to draw? Where is he going to reload? How close is this target? How far is that target? He's got a lot of things that he can think about. Do I have to draw from a table, which means do I have to do my draw a little bit differently, or am I going to draw standing him up, or am I going to draw while I'm moving? Whereas the guy who's more defensive-minded, he needs to start from the assumption of, I just got hit by a baseball bat. I'm lying on the ground. Now I have to draw my gun. And he's not going to have an opportunity to go, okay, I'm lying on the ground. I'm bleeding out of my ear. I think I'll make sure my grip's really good this time. He doesn't have that option.
Right.
So those are just two different approaches to how you do things. And one of them might get you farther down the road, but another one is going to be able to serve you right away. So it's a matter of your priorities, just like everything else.
Okay. So I guess know what you're trying to achieve and then go from there.
Yeah. Always about working from your goals and working backwards from there.
Okay, cool. So now here's the part where we upset the internet. So you put a bunch of rounds through a 9mm 1911. You're back to a 9mm 1911. I've just recently started kind of getting back into 1911s after a very long hiatus and going back to copying good ideas. Hey, it's a 9mm 1911. I've got some projects that are coming up that I can't talk about yet. But anyway, I asked you a question the other day via Facebook Messenger that I was semi being serious, but semi wasn't. But I'm going to make a statement and then get your take on it. 1911s are more fun to shoot than other guns. Go.
At least for me. I've spent the vast majority of my shooting career telling everybody with a 1911 that they were the spawn of Satan and would eventually die with a 1911 in their hand because they don't work. And
because they don't hold enough bullets?
No, mostly just because I thought you could never get one to run well.
Okay.
And that had been my experience with a lot of students I'd seen come through classes, but I've eventually started to realize that I was having enough trouble with all these other guns that I was doing long-term tests with that they weren't quite as perfect as I might have previously thought. And then you start to kind of look around and you realize, well, yeah, I think you've come through classes with 1911s that aren't running well, but I also see people coming through with Glocks that aren't running well.
Yeah.
And you start to kind of put all those numbers together, and I at least was willing to give it a shot. Now, mine wasn't a rack-grade 1911. It was a semi-custom gun that was built by the Springfield Armory Custom Shop, and it ran spectacularly well.
Yeah.
Now I'm working on I've got an heirloom precision gun built by Jason Burton. It was a gift from some incredibly generous friends of mine, and it works amazingly. It also costs 15 times as much as a Glock. And
right.
Is it 15 times as effective as a Glock? I'd be lying if I said yes.
Right.
But it's definitely 15 times cooler than a Glock. Now, it just comes down to, you know, what motivates you to go out and practice. And Glocks don't motivate me to go out and practice. And this thing, I'd go out 3 times a day if I could.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of what prompted me to bring this up was I found myself, and at the time I only had two magazines for this gun that I was shooting, was a Nighthawk Falcon Commander 9mm that I bought just because it was a good deal, and I had this problem about buying guns that are good deals, whatever. But I found myself, you know, standing out. It was cold out, reloading these two 10-round magazines that I have, and I shot 600 rounds that way to the point where I couldn't feel my toes anymore. And then it occurred to me that I was actually having fun shooting. And not that I don't enjoy shooting, but, like, there's a difference between enjoying shooting and having fun shooting, and that's kind of what I noticed. So,
right. Yeah, no, absolutely. I would agree with that completely.
Yeah, and I remember somebody telling me, oh, I want to say a year and a half ago, that life was too short to shoot crappy guns. But
exactly right. I agree.
But so anyway, man, talk about Rampage for the Cure real quick. We got about a minute left in the show.
Okay. RampageForTheCure.com or .org or both is a charity that my wife and I started related to the stuff that I'm going through, and we would always invite people to check it out and consider donating. But if we've only got a minute left, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So if you are JJ the Radio God.
Oh, God. I didn't start that, but yeah, go ahead.
Should Matt be the minion, or should he be the radio demigod?
Huh. He'd have
this
to.
Is something for you to think about.
Yeah. Well, in fairness, I didn't. Okay. So our mutual friend Sean was who stuck me with that. You know, and for whatever reason, it has taken off to the point where I've been told I need to get like T-shirts made and patches and stuff like that. And the only problem I have with it is it implies that I take myself a lot more seriously or think of myself a lot higher than I do. So
yeah, but I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about Matt.
No, you're talking about me because no one talks about Matt because, I mean, he's just my minion. Right. Oh, wow. Did I do that on air?
Are you a god?
Yeah. And when someone asks you that, you say yes. That's what Ghostbusters taught me, at least. So I don't know. I will consider that. Maybe if he keeps doing well and keeps eating his Wheaties, I might upgrade him, you know. But the interesting thing, oh man, there's that word again. Is like his actual job description, like on tax forms and stuff, is minion. Like I made sure to do it that way just because I really wanted to, you know, sort of demean him on a government level, even. So, but so anyway,
that could never possibly come back to haunt you, I'm sure.
No, not at all. I'm sure it won't in the slightest come back to be a problem. And apparently, too, when I said we have a minute left, what I really meant to say was we have two minutes left because here's the last minute of the show. Todd, I appreciate you coming on tonight, man. Very,
absolutely.
Very much.
I appreciate you having me on.
Oh, no problem. And I'm looking forward to see you improve and recover even greater than you have so far. So
I appreciate it. And hopefully we'll get to spend some time on the range soon.
Yeah, yeah. I'm hoping the end of March, but we'll talk about that more. Anyway, thanks, man. Be safe.
All right, you guys too. Thanks for having me on.
Yep. So next week, since everyone is going to be at the tactical conference in Memphis that I once again missed out on because I'm lame, I think we're going to do a listener call-in show. We might give away some cool prizes. So remember, you can always listen to past shows at BallisticRadio.com and like the Facebook page at Facebook.com/BallisticRadio. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next week.